हरि ओम टू ऑल ऑफ यू. ओके, लास्ट वीक वी हैव स्टॉप्ड एट चैप्टर 18 वर्स नंबर 61 एंड दिस चैप्टर 18 इज अ समरी ऑफ ऑल द टीचिंग्स ऑफ द गीता विच कृष्णा विल कंक्लूड इन वर्स नंबर 66. ऑल्सो दिस चैप्टर गोज ऑन टू 78 बट बेसिकली हिज summary of all the teachings will conclude at verse number 66. In the last verse 16, he instructed to Arjuna to do his duty, and if he says if you try to avoid his duty of because you do not want to kill your beloved people on this battlefield, then he says it is only your own moha. It's only your own moha or delusion. Because why is it your delusion? Because your discrimination, the power of discrimination to understand what is right, what is wrong, in Arjuna's case, has been overpowered by his attachment to his people. So because of that strong attachment, it has overpowered his sense of right thinking. Thus he is not sure whether should I stay on the battlefield and do my duty as a soldier, or am I to respect my elders and my gurus? How can I kill them? What is exactly my duty? What is my dharma? So obviously a soldier's duty will involve violence in order to establish dharma. So a soldier cannot say Ahimsa Paramo Dharma. The primary dharma is Ahimsa. Soldier cannot say that. For us, we can say that Ahimsa Paramo Dharma, because we are not supposed to engage in violence. But for a soldier, it is part and parcel of his duty. So here Krishna is saying, you by your delusion, what you do not wish to do, if you do not wish to engage in this war, but because of your own nature, your rajasic gunas, it will drive you in one way or another to come back again to some form of war again. That means you cannot run away from your duty as a kshatriya. Here you are trying to distinguish that if these are my relatives, they have done a dharma, let me excuse them, it's okay. But if they are not my relatives, they do a dharma, then what I should do? I should kill them. But you should not distinguish between who are your relatives and not relatives. What you should only distinguish is what is right and wrong. Who has committed adharma, on that as a soldier you have a duty to suppress. So he says it is your own delusion. You should not run away from this duty. Then therefore how should you perform your duty? So in verse 61 he says, don't, as long as you are a slave to this body, you identify yourself as this body, that means the gunas will function in you, your sattvic, rajasic, tamasic gunas. You will follow your likes and dislikes. So do not surrender to these likes and dislikes. Then who should you surrender to? He says, surrender to Ishvara. Ishvara, which is the highest goal in your life, you should surrender to that. You have two choices. Either I do my actions for the sake of this body, for the sake of my name, my honor, my reputation, or either you surrender the same action but you surrender it to higher authority. I am doing everything for you, O Lord, as a service of the Lord. And where does this Lord reside? He says, Tishtati. Tishtati means the Lord Ishvara is not somewhere far away, is not sitting in heaven or a temple somewhere, but Hridyase, in the hearts of Sarva Bhutana, of all the creatures, whether moving or non-moving, the Lord resides everywhere. That's why we call the Lord all-pervading. Then obviously the question is, if the Lord resides in us, why can't we experience Him? So what is the difference between a saint and a sinner? The difference is not that in the saint there is the Lord, in the sinner there is no Lord, because he says, I reside everywhere. So the difference between a saint and a sinner is, the saint has a purified mind, he can experience this divinity within, he can surrender to this divinity. Whereas the sinner, who has got all forms of impurity in his mind, is not able to realize this divinity. So Krishna's advice is, surrender to that divinity. In all your actions, don't consider yourself as this mind, body, intellect. Surrender everything to the higher divinity and carry on all your actions. And then he gives what is the function of this divinity. What is this? This very divinity is because of the power of this divine consciousness. He says, because of this, Brahmayan, the word Brahmayan means revolving. Everything in this universe functions, is alive, goes in accordance to its nature. Although we have the sattvic, rajasic, tamasic gunas, but we can only function when the power of the Lord is in us, when that consciousness is in us. It is like electricity will power the bulb to function. The bulb cannot function without electricity. But what type of light the bulb gives, whether yellow light, green light, red light, depends on the nature of the bulb. So in the same way, Brahmayan, this Ishvara, ensures that everything is constantly revolving. He enlivens this whole creation. He is everywhere. So there's a famous Upanishad, Keno Upanishad, where there's one line that goes, the question is asked, who is this Ishvara? The answer is, he is the ear of the ear. He is the mind of the mind. He is the speech of the speech. He is the eye of the eye. So what does that mean? He is the ear of the ear. The student goes to the guru and asks, what is this Ishvara? How do I understand Ishvara? The guru's answer is, he is the ear of the ear. He is the eye of the eye. Already the student is confused. So the guru's work is to confuse him furthermore. The idea is for you to go and contemplate on this. Contemplate, because the highest form, the Lord, is unmanifest. How to explain something like that? We have to use examples. So when the guru says he is the ear of the ear, means what?
Which means his senses.
The ear is a cross organ. It cannot hear if the presence of Ishvara is not there. Ishvara enlivens your ears to hear, enlivens your eyes to see. So he is the eye of the eye, he is the ear of the ear, he is the mind of the mind. Your mind is there, but it cannot function if the Ishvara's presence of power is not there. So he says, because of this power, everything revolves. And the second thing he says here, that Maya is also not a very easy thing to understand. Through the power of Maya, the word Maya is not easy to explain. Maya has got two words, Maya, which means that which is not. So Maya means that which is not. And this Maya is the power of the Lord. It is not, it is the power of the Lord, and it contains the three gunas. So what is Maya? Maya is the whole creation, Prakriti, that contains the three gunas. And what is the function of Maya? Maya has got two functions. One is called Vikshepa, V-I-K-S-H-E-P-A, Vikshepa. Vikshepa means projection. I will explain to you. Vikshepa means projection. The second function of Maya is Avarana, A-V-A-R-A-N-A, Avarana, which means veiling or to cover. So what are the two powers of Maya? Vikshepa, projection, and Avarana, which means to veil or to cover. Now, what do we mean by veiling or covering? So a very simple example to understand is this. When you have a cinema screen, a white screen, a blank screen, on this is projected the drama, the movie or whatever it is projected there. So one power of Maya is projection. It brings alive the whole creation. You have vibrant colors, sounds, sights, shapes, forms. All this is the power of Maya to create all this. And second thing, when Maya projects onto the world, the whole creation, just like the projector projects the imagery onto the screen, what is hidden? What is hidden? What is it that you don't see? The screen you don't see. So these are the two powers of Maya. It projects the whole creation, but it covers what? What does the screen represent? The unchanging screen, what does it represent? What does it represent? The consciousness or Ishvara. So Ishvara is there in the creation, but it is the power of Maya that covers all this up. So what are we always engrossed with? We are engrossed with this beautiful creation. We are chasing after this creation, after power, after money. All this is part of the creation. My name, my fame, my position, my status, all this is Maya. Now, why is that called that which is not? The whole thing that we are running after, this whole creation, fame, name, money, position, power, everything, he says all this is Maya, that which is not. Why is it called Maya?
Temporary.
It is not permanent, it is temporary. So whatever you are chasing for is only temporary. But that is the power of Maya. When it creates, it projects a beautiful world and it also veils the Lord. The Lord is there but is veiled. Ramakrishna Paramahansa gave a very beautiful analogy to explain this Maya. He said, supposing you are passing by a beautiful mansion and in front of the mansion there is a beautiful huge garden, lot of flowers, waterfalls, fountains. You go into the garden, you admire the flowers, the fountain, the waterfall, everything. But what is it that you don't admire? You forget. Who is the one who created this garden? So we get lost in the creation, but we forget who is the creator. That is our problem. Then the question will come, then how do I, what we call, cross over this Maya? So for that we go back to chapter 7. He has given us the answer there. Chapter 7, okay, verse number 14, page 141. Chapter 14, chapter 7, verse 14, page 141. So there he says, verily this divine Maya or illusion, what is called illusion, meaning that which does not last, it is there only temporary. This divine Maya of mine, it is Lord's power. It is not something different from Lord. It is Lord's power to project. Made of the gunas. It has the three gunas in it. So your body is Maya. It has the three gunas in it. The world is Maya. It has got three gunas in it. Everything that you are experiencing here is nothing but Maya. It is hard to conquer. But those who take refuge in me alone can cross it. Since Maya contains the three gunas, what he means to say, when you take refuge to cross over, meaning you have to transcend the three gunas. So the tamasic guna, the rajasic guna, the sattvic guna, all the three gunas you have to transcend. How you have to transcend? That was already explained in chapter 14. How we should transcend these three gunas. Because transcending the three gunas is called moksha. Okay? So through the three, karma yoga and upasana yoga and jnana yoga, by using these three sadhanas you can transcend the three gunas and ultimately come to realize Ishvara, who is in this creation, who is in your hriday, Now, friendly heart here does not mean the what you call this physiological heart, but it means the mind. Why the mind? Because the scripture say, once the consciousness pervades the mind activates everything. So everything starts from the mind itself. Once the mind is energized, all our desires, our thoughts, everything comes alive. So he says, coming back to our verse here, verse 61, Maya, because of this projection of Maya and the power of Maya, everything revolves. Sarva Bhutani, all these creations are revolving in this Maya. They are all functioning in this Maya according to their gunas. And he gives an example. Yantra Arudani. Yantra Arudani means as though mounted on a machine. Like the perfect way a wheel, a tire goes around in that circle, in a perfect way everything is moving according to its nature. So the solar system, the way the sun functions, the four seasons come and go, the way the moon comes out in the night, sun comes out daytime, everything, the way the earth revolves, everything is perfectly functioning according to their own nature. Now that brings us to another question. If everything is functioning to its according to its own nature, don't we have free will? Then where is the question of our free will? If we are also like mounted on a machine, how is this supposed to follow? And we don't we have any free will to break out of our pattern of living? So we must not forget that apart from all creatures, it is only human beings that have free will. And where does he say that? He said that if you go back to chapter 9 verse 8 first, if you go back to chapter 9 verse 8, chapter 9 verse 8. Page 166. In this chapter 9 verse 8, first Krishna said, taking hold of my nature, that is his power, he brings forth again and again all this multitude of beings. So from the creation, all these beings are sent back into manifestation. From unmanifested, they go back into manifestation. At the end of the creation cycle, from manifestation, they come back to unmanifestation. So Lord merely energizes this process, the power of manifest, unmanifest to manifest, manifest to unmanifest. But what type of manifestation that you take, whether it is a human, an insect, a plant, or whatever it is, he says, that is subject to the influence of nature or prakriti, depending on your own gunas. So Lord does not determine in what form you come back. That is determined by your own gunas, your own nature. But Lord merely activates this whole creation. But then he also told us in chapter 11, verse 33, chapter 11 verse 33, he told Arjuna there, page 216, the very famous one line, the last line, Mimita Matram Bhava, may you be an instrument in my hands. So that means may you be an instrument in my hands. Again, it is read wrongly. It tells us that we don't seem to have any free will. We just be an instrument in the Lord's hands. So we must understand, when the Lord says, be an instrument in my hands, it means follow your duties according to dharma, surrender to my teachings. Whereas, so when we surrender to the teachings of the Lord and follow the path of dharma, we become an instrument in his hands. It is when we go against his teachings, we follow our likes and dislikes, then we are not an instrument in his hands anymore. So that's what he means to say. You have free will. You can choose. You want to become an instrument in the hands of the Lord, or you want to follow your raga dvesha. That is your choice. So this being an instrument does not mean we have no choice. We can choose to be an instrument we can also choose to follow our personal likes and dislikes also. So coming back to this verse here, so he says everything is moving in its perfect order, but human beings, we must understand, we have the power of self-will, free will. So now, verse number 62, since Ishvara is within us, since he is enlivening all our actions, our mind, our body, how is it that you should surrender to him, he speaks about in this verse number 62. How should we discharge all our actions? With what attitude? So verse number 62, he says, Saranam Gaccha. Gaccha means to seek. Saranam, refuge. Refuge in what? In Tam Eva, in the Lord alone. When we say seek refuge in the Lord, it means your attitude of doing all your actions should be by dedicating all your actions to that Lord who is where? Within, who is within you, who is a witness, who is your consciousness, who is your witness. So surrender all your actions to that higher authority. Don't give in to your likes and dislikes. Surrender your actions, follow the teachings which are given in the scriptures and surrender to that Lord who is within you. And what type of surrender? Sarva Bhavena. Wholehearted surrender, partial surrender, like not sure what to do. No, wholeheartedly you must surrender. You must have that strong belief that Ishvara is there within you. He is watching everything that you do. So, Sarva Bhavena, sincerely, with a reverential attitude, surrender your body, surrender your mind, surrender your intellect, and align all. When you say surrender, means what? Align all your thoughts, your speech, your actions according to the teachings of the scriptures. That is called surrendering. So not following your whims and fancies. When we surrender to the Lord, we must follow his teachings, what he is saying to us, how we should lead our lives. Then, of course, the next question every human being will ask, when I surrender to the Lord, what do I get? What is my benefit?
His grace.
Tat prasada. Prasada. Prasadam means, here he says, tat prasada. You will get his grace. And we must understand what type of grace, because every type of every type of action we do, good action, we get the punyam. But the punyam, the Lord's grace, can be of two types. One is material rewards, one is spiritual rewards. So when we talk about this prasada of the Lord, that means when we surrender all our actions to him, we are acting in a state of selflessness, in a state of surrender. So what is Lord's prasadam going to be? He says here, prasyasi, you will attain not the material mundane rewards, but his promise is if you surrender all your actions to him, you will attain the prasadam in the form of param shanti. Param means supreme, shanti means bliss or peace. And then what do you mean by supreme bliss or peace? If you surrender all your actions to him, that means the reward that you receive is in the form of chitta shuddhi, inner purification, purity of mind. When you can attain bliss only when the impurities from your mind are gone, when there is no ego, no lust, no greed, no anger, no jealousy, no pride, all these are what are causing our state of bliss to be disturbed. So Lord is saying, by your very actions of surrendering all your actions to me, I will reward you back with that supreme bliss. You will eradicate all the impurities one by one from your mind when you learn to surrender all your actions to me. Supreme bliss. And then what happens when your mind is pure, when all the impurities are removed, what happens then? what happens then? Then only thoughts of what we call vairagya arise in you. Thoughts of jnanam arise in you. Higher thoughts, more noble thoughts arise in you. At first you learn to surrender, you attain this purification of mind. From purification of mind come more noble, more higher thoughts. Who am I? Who is God? Where is God? How do I attain moksha? All these thoughts arise in such a pure mind. In an impure mind, such kind of thoughts will never arise. In an impure mind, what kind of thoughts will arise? What is my next car? When is the next iPhone model coming out? Where do I go for holiday? But in a pure mind, arises only noble thoughts, higher thoughts. So what is the next stage? He says, after that what happens? When your mind gets pure, then he says, Shashvatam Sthanam. With a pure mind, which is able to absorb spiritual knowledge, he says you will attain Shashvatam, which means eternal. Sthanam means state. Now what is this eternal state? It means when living, you will attain the state known as Jivan Mukta. You will be free from all the shackles of the ups and downs of life. Again, not that you won't go through good and bad times, but you will have the inner strength to face all the good and bad reactions that happen. So, Shashvatam Sthanam is attaining that eternal state known as Jivan Mukta. Jivan, which means living, Mukta means free while living. So you are able to face all the trials and tribulations of your life, and upon death you attain the ultimate bliss. So it is stage by stage. This state of Jivan Mukta in the Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, Krishna has given all the marks of a Jivan Mukta in the final 18 verses of chapter 2. He called such a person Stita Prajna. Stita means steady, Prajna means wisdom. A man of steady wisdom. What are the marks of such a person? So we can use it also as a checklist, as a guideline. Are we heading in that direction? Very beautiful, the 18 closing verses of chapter 2. Very beautifully lay out all the marks of a Stita Prajna. And again in chapter 14 also he gave us the one who has crossed over the three gunas, what is called a gunatit. Also he gave us the marks of a gunatit. A Stita Prajna is also the one who has crossed over the three gunas. What are the marks? Also again in chapter 14 he gave us. So all these are for us to note down, to know these are the goals that we should aspire for. And more and more of these qualities we accumulate, it means what? We are moving towards the right direction. Verse 63. So now, in this chapter 18, from verses 41 to 49, Krishna has summarized the path of Karma Yoga. Whatever he explained in all those chapters, in the crystallized form from verses 41 to 49, he has summarized Karma Yoga. Then in verses 50 to 55, he summarized Jnana Yoga. So in a nutshell, if you look at these verses, you will understand the essence of Karma Yoga and the essence of Jnana Yoga. Now, Bhagavan wants to conclude the whole Gita discourse by giving Arjuna his final advice. So the last few verses, 63 to 66 now. So, now Krishna tells Arjuna, iti means in this way, all the knowledge which I have imparted to you, okay, maya by me, I have imparted akhyatam. Akhyatam means I have imparted to you. In this way, how? In this Krishna-Arjuna dialogue. In this dialogue which has been going on for the last 17 chapters, Krishna is telling Arjuna, I have imparted to you whatever knowledge there is, I have given to you already. The very essence of Vedic knowledge. Now, he wants us to understand that this is not an ordinary knowledge. It is not just a simple knowledge. It is not easy to attain. So, he qualifies this knowledge by saying that this knowledge, this jnanam, is guhyataram. Guhyataram means the most secret of all the secrets. the most supreme secret. There can't be any more higher secret than this. So we must understand, therefore, that the beauty, the glory, the essence of this knowledge, it is the highest of all secrets, meaning two things. When we say the highest of all secrets, one is because compared to all other types of knowledges, they only deal with the gross changing world. This is the only knowledge that deals with the unchanging self that is within you. Every other knowledge that you attain, it's not that those knowledges are not important, but they deal with the gross changing world. That's why this is considered the most secret, because it involves something which is very subtle. It's not very easy to understand. Anything external that has a shape, form, color is very easy for me to explain to you. But to explain to you something that is not manifest, that is so subtle, it requires a lot of, it requires a very sharp intellect to understand this. So it is called something very secret. It is very sacred. Not only it is secret, it is very sacred. Because why? This knowledge is not simply imparted to anybody. And the reason being is that unless you are really interested in this knowledge, unless you have a refined mind, unless you have a pure mind, unless you have a seeking mind, you will not at all receive any benefit from this knowledge. So your mind has got to be prepared. That's why in the ancient times, when the students went to the Gurukul and they surrendered to the Guru, they took with them dry twigs to give to the Guru. So the dry twigs are a symbolism to explain to the Guru that my mind is like a dry twig, because a dry twig catches fire very easily. That means the student is telling the Guru, my mind is like a dry twig, it is ready for knowledge, it is ready to accept this knowledge. And then the Guru does not impart knowledge. What does he do? Even you go and surrender to him, he won't impart knowledge to you. What does he make you do? If you go to ashram, Gurukul, and you surrender to the Guru and say, Guru, I am ready to receive this knowledge, I am thirsting for this knowledge, I have come in search of this knowledge, can you teach me? Can. Say, first you go and do seva. Go and wash the cows, go and feed the cows, milk the cows, cook my food, cook the food for the Guru, massage his legs and all that. Why? To test whether you are prepared, whether you are ready or not, whether you genuinely are surrendering for that knowledge. So 1 year they make you do all the work up and down. Then they see you are still adamant, you still want the knowledge. Okay, then come, they are ready to teach you. So that's why it remains a secret of all secrets, because people start on this knowledge, but halfway they give up. It's not very easy. So the most precious secret I'm giving to you. Now, since I've given you this knowledge, what should you do? Close your book, go back home, put it in the drawer, go and sleep. What should you do? He says here, now that I've imparted this knowledge, what should you do? Vimrise. Vimrise means ponder, think about it. Not simply blindly accept it. Yes, you have questioned me, I've given you the answers, but now you've got the knowledge. Don't simply now accept it. Now, vimrise, ponder. Ponder over etat, this knowledge. And ponder means mananam, not just for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, but asesena, completely, thoroughly analyze this knowledge. So be very thorough. Don't just accept the knowledge blindly. Think about it very carefully. Analyze it properly. Try to understand the depth of this knowledge. Because understand, this is only a dialogue. It means very fast it's going like that. So you have to take the essence and go back and ponder on it. And that's why if you study the Gita, it is also important to study other texts like the Upanishads. Because the Gita is just a dialogue. Krishna saying this, Arjuna saying this, But you want to go into the deeper meaning, then you have to go into the Upanishads, especially the 10 principal Upanishads that Adi Shankaracharya wrote commentaries on. And there's another one called the Brahma Sutra, which was written by Ved Vyasa. So the study of Upanishads, 10 Upanishads, plus study of Brahma Sutra, which is 550 verses, plus study of Bhagavad Gita, these three constitute what is known as Prasthana Trayam, which are the three most sacred groups of scriptures, and they fall under the study of Vedanta. So what is Vedanta? Vedanta basically is 10 Upanishads plus Gita plus Brahma Sutra to really understand. So he's saying contemplate completely and fully according. Okay, now that I've given you the knowledge, now that you contemplated on the knowledge, then what are you supposed to do? So he says, now you have to kuru do yatha as ichchasi, as you like. Now that means what he is telling you. It is not necessary after pondering over the knowledge, if you still don't accept it, if you don't believe in this knowledge, then you make your choice. So there is no compulsion that you must follow this knowledge. He's saying, I've told you the knowledge, you contemplate upon it, then ichchasi, do as you please. Whether you want to accept, whether you want to reject, it is your choice in accordance with your wishes. So there is freedom in our religion. But we must understand the consequences. If I follow the Lord's teachings, I follow dharma, I should know what is the consequence. If I don't want to follow the Lord's teachings, I want to follow my whims and fancies, I should also know what are the consequences also. So therefore it is for you to contemplate now. Right? You have been given the knowledge, go back and contemplate, then decide whether you want to put this knowledge into practice or whether you want to disregard this knowledge. That is your choice. Now, therefore, if we just summarize this, basically what the Lord is saying, do your duties according to your varna and ashrama. Varna means follow your gunas, take up your duties and responsibilities, your work according to your gunas. Ashrama means according to your stage of life, whether you're a bachelor, householder, etc. Also depending on time and place, because at different place you play different duties. In a household you are a mother, you play the duty of a mother. Then you go to your workplace, you play another role. Then maybe you serve in your association, you are a treasurer there. You go there you have a different duty. So duties will vary from time and also vary from place to place. Whatever the duties you have, do them, don't run away from them. Okay? But what is the most important here, they keep on repeating, give up attachment. Never consider yourself as the doer. Always consider yourself as an instrument in the hands of the Lord. That is the difference. The difference is not that you all are not doing your duties. All of us are doing our duties and responsibilities. But either are you thinking of yourself as I, or are you thinking of yourself as Atma, as an instrument in the hands of the Lord. So number one, don't be attached to the action and don't be attached to the results of your action. Both, you are a karta and you are a bhokta. So as a karta, you must understand how to function. As a bhokta, when you receive the results of your action, you must know how to handle the results of your action also. And what happens when you follow this? You attain inner purification. Then you have two choices. Upon attaining inner purification, you have two choices. One, remain as a householder, reduce your attachment to the world, okay? Reduce your duties, responsibilities, reduce your time on prayers, rituals, etc. Reduce your interaction with the world. Take that extra time and engage on the path of knowledge. So what do you do once you attain, because the purpose of doing action is to attain purity of mind. Once you attain purity of mind, then these actions must be reduced. Once these actions are reduced, you have more time to spend on the path of knowledge. That is one option. Second option is you can give up everything, give up your family, give up possession, give up home, give up everything, go to a ashram and take up the state of a sannyasi. That option is in your hands. Okay? So, you can renounce your household, but that all depends again, as I have explained to you last week, what are the, there are also certain terms and conditions involved there. And the third, of course, is those who are the very rare souls who are already born with inner purity. So they are born in a household, but they have already attained the state of inner purity. So they are not subject to go through the whole thing. They can just jump straight away to sannyas. And those examples we've seen in the lives of Adi Sankaracharya, Ramana Maharishi, and also even Ramakrishna Paramahansa married Sarada Devi, but although they stayed together in the ashram, but he always looked upon her with divinity. So that basically these are the ways that you can progress. Okay. Now we come to verse 64. Now basically Krishna has finished giving all his teachings already. But 64, 65, 66, three more verses left. So finally still out of the compassion of the Lord, he has already 17 chapters he summarized in this few verses in chapter 18. I told you the few verses he summarized Karma Yoga, few verses he summarized Jnana Yoga. Now, still out of compassion for his devotees, he is going to summarize everything into two verses now. So, 18 chapters, 17 chapters summarized, again summarized in verses 64 and 65. Final instructions. Okay? What are the final instructions? Now he says, Srunu, listen, one more final time. Why final time? Why one more again, Bhuya? Last week's lesson cannot remember, right? So need revision again. So, Srunu, Bhuya, listen again, one more time again. To what? Me, Vachaha, my utterance or my teachings. One more time. Two verses now he is going to summarize everything. Again he wants to remind Arjuna that these are not ordinary teachings. What have been imparted to you is Paramam. They are the highest, they are the most supreme knowledge. Why? Because this knowledge is the only knowledge that can remove all your doubts and delusions. No matter whatever degree, master's, PhD you have, when it comes to dealing with the real world, relationships, objects, people, etc., I'm not saying that knowledge is wrong. It's very important, that helps us to make a living, to pay our bills. But when it comes to dealing with life, that university or college doesn't teach you anything at all. So that's why this is the param, the most highest, the most supreme knowledge that tells you how to deal with life in every relationship. You're talking about household relationships, go to work relationships, whatever relationship, this knowledge is a very powerful knowledge that helps us to analyze and deal with the world. And again he says, to remind Arjuna, Sarva Bhuyatamam, it is the greatest secret, the most profound secret. Okay? So now, he wants to make sure that the disciple has understood the teachings. So he's going to summarize the teachings here. Now, he explains again why he wants to reveal this knowledge again one more time in a very summarized way. Now, when the guru keeps on repeating and repeating and repeating the knowledge, what is the reason? Some of you have fed up, say, same old thing, keep on repeating and repeating. What is the reason? What? Emphasize, but why? What? But why? For what? For what reason? For whose benefit? Gurus benefit or disciples benefit? Disciples benefit. So when Krishna says, I am repeating this to you again, it is not because of Krishna's benefit, not that he wants to benefit from the knowledge, or he wants to gain adoration or what you call glory from his disciples. So, or by the guru giving you knowledge, the guru doesn't get punyam or papam also. There's no additional punyam and all that. So why is he giving you all this knowledge again? Dridam ishtaha. Dridam, your very ishtaha, dear to me. So because of his love for the disciple, because of the love for his devotees, out of compassion to see them go away from the wrong path and come to the right path, that's why the Lord is imparting this knowledge and trying to make sure that you understood the gist of the knowledge. So as long as you surrender sincerely to the Lord, he will definitely ensure that you will get this knowledge. You don't have to worry. In chapter 9 verse 29 also, he told us something similar to that. Chapter 9 verse 29. Page 176. Okay, what did he say there? Chapter 9 verse 29. I am equally present in all beings. There is none hateful or dear to me. But then those who are sincerely seeking this knowledge, those who worship me with devotion, then the Lord will impart the knowledge. So he is there, he is willing to give the knowledge to anybody, but it depends on you whether you want to reach out and accept that knowledge. So now here he says, out of compassion, because you are dear to me, dridam ishtaha, tatha, therefore, Vakshami, I shall speak, I shall reveal this knowledge. For what reason? See, he gives the reason very clearly here. For what reason? The word used here is hitam. Hitam in the last line. Hitam means for your welfare. Not for my welfare, for your welfare. He wants to repeat and make sure that you have understood this knowledge. It's because for your own good. If you implement it, only you will benefit, you will get the punya, right? So therefore, this knowledge will lead you to moksha. Now, having given this promise, in 65 and 66, these two verses, he summarizes basically the whole teachings of the Gita. So here now, he says, there are set of instructions for you to follow. First of all, he gives us four instructions in verse number 65 to follow. To put into practice four instructions. What are the four instructions? The first one is bhava manmanaha. Bhava means bitao. Manmanaha, man is mind. Manaha means fix your mind on me. First set of instruction. Have your mind fixed on me. Now, what do you mean by have your mind fixed on me? What do you mean by that? Have your mind fixed on me? Bhava man manaha, first set of instruction. Fix your mind on me. Fix your mind on me means, first of all, what is your goal in life? First of all, ask yourself, what is my purpose and goal in life? So when you say fix your mind on the Lord, that means you first decide whether you want to make Lord as your primary goal in life. If you don't accept Lord as your goal in life, then all other teachings become irrelevant, isn't it? So the very first instruction is, are you prepared to fix the Lord as your primary goal in life? Yes, you may have many other goals. You can have a goal to set up a business, do your masters, go and travel overseas. That doesn't matter. But those are all secondary goals. My primary goal is I must attain moksha in this life. I want to attain the Lord. So first of all, ask yourself that. If you fix the Lord as your primary goal in life, then what happens? What happens then? If you take that spiritual journey seriously, what happens? He will give you the?
He will give you the knowledge of life to be so.
You see, then you will follow the teachings wholeheartedly, isn't it? Right. Otherwise, if you fix the world as your goal, then what will you follow? You will follow that which leads you to the world. So once you fix Lord as the goal in your life, then only you will follow the teachings according to the scriptures, because that is the goal you want to attain. So first thing is bhava man manaha, fix your mind on me. Fix me as your highest goal in life. Now once you have done that, then what do you do? He says, second instruction, mad bhaktaha. Bhaktaha, become my devotee. Then only once you fix Lord as your goal in life, then only you can be his devotee. Right? Meaning put in practices, all the relevant practices to be the devotee of the Lord. So you give priority to that. You see, that is why some people progress on the spiritual path, because they give priority to that. Whereas other people give priority to their worldly desires. So they run after the worldly desires. When they have time, then they think about spiritual growth. So it depends on you. Do you want to give spiritual growth your priority, or you want to give worldly growth your priority? Once you set the Lord as your goal, then he says, mat bhaktaha, be my devotee. Put in all the various, what we call sadhanas. Okay? You will appreciate doing all this. Studying the scriptures, going to temples, all this becomes relevant and meaningful once you have fixed Lord as your goal. Third instruction, mat yaji, be my worshipper, worship me. How do you worship the Lord? By offering thousands of flowers, thousands of fruits, pouring all the milk there. How? What do you mean by worship me? Which has given us the key already so many times.
Huh?
So through your actions, through your duties, worship him. That's all he's telling you. He's not telling you, go and offer flowers, go and sit in the temple all day and chant Rama Rama, Krishna Krishna. No. Through your actions, he's saying, surrender your actions to me. Worship me through your duties and responsibilities. So, see, very nice. Set your goal, set me as your goal. Then number two, what is the number two? Be my devotee. Then worship me through your duties and responsibilities. Constantly surrender as your actions, constantly think about me, surrender your actions to me. So, mat yaji, be my worshipper, offer all your actions to me, consider yourself as an instrument in my hands. And finally, mam namaskuru, bow down to me. Bow down to me means what? Bow down to me means what? Remember, the first part is surrender actions. Bow down to me means as you receive the results of your action, surrender the results also to me. So bow down to me. Accept pleasant, accept unpleasant. Both are coming from Ishvara. So seek the support of Ishvara. Be humble, be surrender everything to Ishvara. Remain firm on your path. So all these are the four actions. What happens now? He says, if you follow these four set of instructions for these four practices, now the Lord makes a promise to you. So he's telling you first what you should do. Then he's telling you now what will I promise you. Guarantee card he's giving you. What is the guarantee card? Eshyasi, you will attain mam, me. Eva alone, as in the word eva. You will eshyasi mam eva, you will attain me alone. Now again, that is a very interesting why he adds the word. He doesn't say you will attain me, he says you will attain me alone. So that word eva must make us think, what does he mean by that? You will attain me alone if you follow this four set of instructions. You will attain me alone. Okay, in a way you're right. What we need to say is, by doing this four set of instructions, you are not going to attain Swarga Loka, because that is not your intention. You are not going to attain Punya Muso, because why you don't want to attain Punya? You don't want to come back, right? So you don't want Punya. You don't want to even go to Swarga Loka. That's why he's saying, if you follow this, you will come directly to me. You don't have to attain punyam, you don't have to take another birth, you don't have to, go to Swarga Loka. You will come to me alone. That is the final destination.
So that moksha?
Yes, moksha, exactly. So that's what he's telling you. Because if you are doing actions, good actions, but with an attitude of selfishness, then you are not going to attain the Lord. You are going to get Swarga Loka, you are going to get punyam. All is going to bring you back again to this earth again. So you will attain me alone. Videha Mukti. That is what he is promising. And he says here, to erase all our doubts. This is not anybody else saying, but the Lord himself committing. This is Satyam. This is the truth. He is telling you this is the truth. He is giving you a promise and a guarantee card there. Satyam Prati Jane. I promise te to you. Satyam Prati Jane te. This truth, I promise to you, this is really what will happen. So very powerful words as he's concluding his teachings, he's giving us a promise. This is what you do, this is what I'm going to promise you. You will come directly to me. No transit, but straight to the Lord. So surely you'll be one with me. Why? Because Asi Priha, you are dear to me. When you follow these instructions of the Lord, you are dear to Him. That's why He will bring you straight to Him. Okay? Now, how will you get this moksha? He finalizes now. This verse 66 is the final teachings of the Lord in this Bhagavad Gita. What are the final teachings? How will you attain this state of moksha? First of all, parityaja, may you give up. Parityaja means relinquish, give up. What? Sarva dharma, give up all your dharmas. Now this is the most confusing verse actually. Because here he says, give up all your dharmas. But earlier, when Arjuna wanted to give up his dharma, what did he say? Do your dharma, do your duty. Now finally he is telling him what? Give up all your dharmas. So it's a little bit confusing, but for that we must go back to Shankara's commentary on this verse. Very important to understand. He simplified his whole commentary very nicely. Shankara has given the definition of the word dharma here means both dharmic and adharmic works. Okay, so follow very carefully. Here dharma means give up both dharmic and adharmic works. That means what? Give up all secular and religious actions, renounce, but not renounce the actions. Renounce what? Renounce the fruits of the action. He's not telling, when he says sarva dharma parityaja, not renounce the dharma, but renounce the motive behind your actions. That motive must be what? Surrender to the Lord. So that is what he is saying here. That's why you must be very careful. When you take a direct reading, give up all your dharma doesn't mean give up all your duties and then run to jungle and sit down. No. He is saying here, this is Shankara's interpretation. That dharma here means give up the motive and the attachment to the fruits of the actions. Because why? If you do good actions with the motive that you want to get a reward, then what happens? You accumulate punya. Right? Of course, unrighteous actions we know will lead to our spiritual downfall. But even any dharma, any duty and responsibility done with a motive for result will create a punyam and will again bring you back into this cycle of birth and death. So for the sake of, for example, if you do rituals, okay, you go to temples, you do rituals. There are two reasons why you can do rituals. One is you do rituals because you want something back in return. The other is you do rituals for the love of God. So which is going to bring you back again? The first one. Because you want something back, you get the punyam, you come back again. But if you do the same ritual for the love of God, the attitude changes, there is no residual result. So this is what he is saying. Surrender selfish actions. Do all your dharmas on a selfless basis. Surrender all your selfish dharmas. I want this, I want that, I want this, I want that. Surrender all your selfish dharmas. And don't hanker for punyam. Papam, of course, we do what, but don't even hanker for punyam also. And then what do? He says, so he's giving us the key here. When you surrender your actions, he says, saranam braja maam. Saranam braja, take refuge in me. So who are you doing actions for now? I'm doing for the Lord. So he's saying, surrender dharma, but understand, surrender it to me. See, parityaja, give up the dharma, but surrender it to me. So not surrender the dharma, but surrender the selfish attitude. So may you dedicate all your actions to Ishvara. Why? Because Ishvara is the one who is receiving your actions, and Ishvara is the one who will give you back your due results also. And if you are only surrendering for the love of God, then the due result is what? You will go to the Lord. Okay? So therefore, all your actions, surrender the motive to the Lord. And then again comes his final promise. Here the Lord explains how he will grant you moksha. How is it that, because last verse he said you will come to me. Now this verse is explaining how you will come to him. Why you will come to him. Under what condition you will come to him. He says, Aham, I the Lord, moksha ishami, I will free you. Moksha ishami tvam, I will free you from what? Sarva papevyo, all your sins I will free you from. Now again, we have to understand this. What do you mean by it? He is going to grant us moksha, provided we follow the set of instructions. How is he going to grant us moksha? By removing all our sins. And this is why sometimes, you know, we get carried away when we read, people say go to Ganges and dip in the Ganges river, wash away all your sins. So then why should I study the Gita, better buy plane ticket, go to Ganges, dump myself Ganges and I am freed of all sins. But what do you mean by sin? Because it's a very, the word papam is a very deep word to understand. So we have to understand, we can only get moksha when we clear these three sins. I have explained this to you before. It's just a refresher. Okay? The three sins are what? That continuously bring us back to the cycle of birth and death. So the first group of sins or papam is our sanchita karmas, the warehouse of karmas. As long as this warehouse of karmas is not exhausted, where there is punyam, there is papam in this warehouse of karmas. As long as we don't exhaust this, we have to constantly come back again and again. But that is only one group of karmas. Second group is what we call prarabdha karmas. P-R-A-R-A-B-B-H-A. Prarabdha karmas. Prarabdha karmas are from the sanchita karmas, because you cannot exhaust. Imagine you have been living for thousands and thousands of years. In one lifetime, you cannot exhaust all your karmas. You will go through a turbulent life like that. You know, so many, you got 5,000 karmas to exhaust. You cannot. So what is happening? Portion of the karmas is taken out and given to you to exhaust in these lives. It can be punyam, it can be papam. So this you must exhaust between birth to death. You have no choice but to go through it. Even the Lord will not remove this prarabdha karma. He will not interfere with the prarabdha karma. So those are karmas which are portion of this which is taken out from the warehouse and exhausted in this life. Now there is a third type of karma which is called agami karma, A-G-A-M-I, which is the fresh new karmas you create in this life. So until all these three are exhausted, you have to come back again and again. Okay? Now the question is, when Krishna says here that I will free you from all the karmas, meaning what? Meaning, when you have changed your attitude, when you follow these instructions of the Lord, according to the scriptures, you live your life, surrender all your actions to Him, come purify yourself, come to the path of knowledge. The first thing is, henceforth, you don't accumulate agami karma. There is no more new, fresh karma. So one karma is gone, agami karma is gone, right? Okay. What about prarabdha? You cannot run away from prarabdha. But because of your inner strength, because of your complete faith in Lord, you are able to handle your prarabdha karma. They don't affect you as much as they would. Okay? So prarabdha karmas you have to burn out till your death. Now that leaves us only with the sanchita karmas. So what Lord is saying, when I free you of all sins, it means that the sanchita karmas He will burn out. His grace is that. His grace is upon those who have achieved sthita prajna status in this life. Those who are the, what is that? What jnani is that again? Jiva. What is that? Jivan Mukta. Those who have attained the state of Jivan Mukta, those who have attained the state of sthita prajna in this life, they are not going to accumulate new karmas. They will just have to exhaust their prarabdha karmas, and the sanchita karmas are totally burnt off by the life. So that is what it means, that I will free you of all sins. I will burn away all those warehouse or sanchita karmas. Okay? And therefore, he concludes by telling Arjuna, Ma Suchaha, do not lament, do not grieve. Because what was Arjuna doing? What is the title of first chapter? Arjuna Vishada Yoga. He fell into a state of despondency. He was sitting there crying, grieving. Don't cry, don't grieve. Why? Then what should you do? You are crying, crying and crying only. Crying about the dead past and the unborn future. What should you do? Rise up. Do your duty and responsibility. But follow my teachings. So don't grieve. Don't waste time crying. Crying is not going to help you. Why is my situation like that? Why this place like that? Why that one is like that? Don't waste time crying. He's telling him, Ma Suchaha, do not lament. Do not waste your time crying there. I have given you the instruction. I have given you the teachings. How to come out of this samsara. Why are you grieving? Why are you crying? Stand up. Rise up. Take your bow and arrow. Do your duty. Follow the teachings of what I have given you. Surrender all your actions to me. So he is saying, dedicate all your action. Don't waste your time crying. Okay? And therefore, he concludes this by already telling him what will be the goal also if you follow the teachings also. So if you remember, we go back to again chapter 2 verse 11. There also Krishna was, admonishing Arjuna when he first started his teachings. Chapter 2 verse 11 page 30. He tells Arjuna, you grieve over those who should not be grieved. What is in the past you are grieving? What is in the future you are grieving? You are wasting your time grieving and grieving and grieving. It is time now for you to rise up, take your bow and arrow and do your duties. Follow the teachings of the scripture. So here in this chapter 18 especially, the three parts or the three yogas, actually there's one verse for each yoga, if you can contemplate on these three verses, it will help us a lot. So first is chapter 18 verse 46. You look at chapter 18 verse 46. In this, he is talking about the steadfastness in action. So how we should dedicate our action in this chapter 18 verse 46. This is one, how you say, seed verse or foundation verse that explains to us the very essence of Karma Yoga. He says that you should worship the Lord. Where is this Lord? The one who has created you, the one who is sustaining you, and upon death that which you will go back to. How should you worship him? Through performance of your duty. That's all he's saying. Not telling you to do any elaborate prayers and rituals. Worship the Lord through the performance of your duties with the right attitude. So this one verse gives us the crux of Karma Yoga, steadfastness in action. Man attains perfection. Perfection here meaning chitta shuddhi, inner purification. So this one verse you can contemplate upon that summarizes basically our steadfastness in Karma Yoga. What about steadfastness in knowledge? Verse number 55. Page 3 to 8. This is the culmination of knowledge. He realizes me by devotion in essence, what and who I am. So I explain this to you. What and who I am means what? See, that's why you need revision or not. What and who I am? Who understands me in essence? Verse number 55, chapter 18. Who understands me in essence, what and who I am? Meaning who understands my lower nature and my higher nature. Lower nature is the manifested nature. Higher nature is the unmanifested nature. One who understands both in totality, this is the path of Jnana Yoga. What happens? Knowing me in reality as that I am both the manifest and unmanifest, forthwith enters me, becomes one with me, attains moksha. So this is the essence of the Jnana Yoga. Jnana Yoga is to us to understand that Lord is both in the manifest and the unmanifest. And finally, steadfastness in devotion is given to us here in chapter, in verse number 66. The last verse which we discuss. Devotion, in one single line there, take refuge in me alone. That is devotion. So the path of action, the path of knowledge, the path of devotion. Take refuge in me. And this devotion, we must understand, applies in everything. It doesn't mean devotion means going to temple and just praying to God. It means when I do my action, it is with devotion to the Lord I do my duties. When I study the scriptures, there is devotion in my study and I offer it to the Lord. So devotion must be in everything. Not only just when you go to temple and pray. It must be in all aspects of your life. So all these three are summarized here. Okay? And that brings us now to verse 67. So the teachings are basically completed. There is nothing additional that Krishna needs to teach. But these are some of the final instructions that Lord wants to give to who? To the students and to the teacher. So he wants to tell you some final instructions. Now that you have heard this knowledge, have you benefited from the knowledge? Okay, if you have benefited from this knowledge, can we share this knowledge with others? Can. But there must be certain conditions. What type of people you can share knowledge with? So there are four types of people whom we should not share this knowledge with. Okay? Another way we can understand this verse, one is by who we should not share this knowledge with. Another way is what are the qualities we should have that we are able to attain this knowledge. sometimes why is it we can't attain this knowledge? So what are the defects here also? Two ways you can look at this. Okay. So what are the qualities that a devotee should have in order to totally, fully absorb this knowledge? The first is tapas. There must be some discipline in your life. Now, what is the purpose of leading a disciplined life? Why constantly the scriptures talk about tapas, have discipline? This tapas does not just mean fasting, it means total discipline. What is the purpose of discipline? What is the purpose of encouraging us to have a disciplined life? Conserve our energies. Otherwise we are wasting. If we don't have discipline in our life, we are following our whims and fancies. We are just wasting our energies and not really progressing in the goals we want. So tapas is a form of conserving our energies, and then we have that extra time to devote to our goals in life. That's why we lead a disciplined life, we keep our time for prayers, we keep our time to do our duties and responsibilities, we keep our time for our exercise to maintain our body healthy, we keep our time to read the scriptures. There must be a discipline in life. Otherwise you are not going to progress. So number one is tapas. Number two, reverence. Reverence to who? Devotion to God and the scriptures, to Bhagwan and his teachings. There must be a sense of reverence. Okay? Devotion. Third is, you must have this genuine desire to listen and to grasp the teachings. There must be that, hunger or the thirst for these teachings. Right? Not just come and listen mechanically and then just forget everything. There must be that inner thirst in you that you are really interested in these teachings. Number four, very important, a non-critical mind. Because what do you mean by non-critical mind? Many people approach the study of the scriptures with a motive to find some fault in the scriptures. And many a times I meet such kind of people. After I give a lecture somewhere, they'll come and analyze my whole talk like that and find all kinds of holes in my talk. Until I also don't realize until there are so many, I don't know how they look at it, they'll pull out everything from here, there, connect up to here, there. That means what? They are coming not to listen, to receive. They are coming how to find a way to criticize you. So who's going to lose? I'm not going to lose. Who's going to lose? The person is going to lose, isn't it? He's already closed his mind. This is what I want. This, what you're saying is not correct. So I just come how to be critical of your teaching. That's all. So it is not going to benefit anybody at all. So the non-critical, you must have some faith in the scriptures. Not try to look for some holes or some kind of faults in the scriptures. So here he says now, in this verse 67, idam, these teachings, which are the very essence of the Vedas, which I have imparted to you now, they, in detail, the most profound teachings, okay? And why especially is chosen Arjuna? Because Arjuna has constantly asked Krishna, said, there is no end to my satisfaction in hearing to your teachings. So he wants to hear more and more. He is a very eager student. Okay? So these teachings, na vachyam, should not be taught, should not be shared. Kadachana, at any time, under any circumstances, to who? Number one, to the person who is a tapaskaya. You see the word tapaskaya, the word a doesn't appear because there's an apostrophe on top there. So there's a silent A there, okay? So tapas is austerities. A tapaskaya means one who is devoid of austerities. One who does not lead a disciplined life, who leads a totally indisciplined life. So as I say, you can look at it both ways. One, don't share knowledge with a person who leads an indisciplined life. Number two, we should also bring discipline into our lives if we want to absorb this knowledge. So one who has a mastery of his senses, mind and body. So total master. First quality. Second, na bhaktaya, Na Bhaktaya means who is not a devotee, who doesn't have that sense of surrender to the Lord, surrender to the scriptures, surrender to the Guru. So Arjuna has already surrendered, he has indicated to the Lord. He is not running away from the battlefield. He says he doesn't want to fight, but he's told the Lord, I surrender to you. So he's ready to listen to this. So Na Bhaktaya, who is not a devotee. Okay. Third quality. Na Ashushru Save. Na Ashushru Save, who does not surrender to the Lord, meaning one who lacks humility and compassion. One who has no humility, one who has no compassion for the creatures, for others, such a kind of person also is not going to be worthy to receive these teachings. Okay. And the fourth one. Yaha, one who abhyasuyati, one who cavils. Cavils means what? Who only has faith, who has no faith and only doubts. Is this correct? Is this really what it means? You know, asking questions is okay, but looking for holes, looking for defects, having doubts on the scriptures, again, is not going to help us to progress. We have to accept that the teachings are the truth. But if we don't understand them, what is the problem? The problem is our lack of understanding. Not that the scriptures are wrong, it is because we don't understand. So by all means, question to clear your doubts, but at least first, don't look for holes and faults in the scriptures. Honest. And you remember in chapter 9, verse 1, Krishna told Arjuna, the reason why I am giving you these teachings is because you are anasuyave. You do not have doubts in it. You don't find faults in my teachings. So first of all, have faith in the teachings. So now we must understand, it is not, if you have one quality and you don't have the other three qualities, it's okay, no. The word cha, C-A is used here in this Sanskrit text, meaning all the four qualities you must have. So don't think I have one, I don't have the other three, never mind. No, it means all these four qualities must come together. They are all four important for you to grasp these teachings, for you to absorb these teachings. And these are also the people who you should not share the teachings with if they don't have this kind of qualities. Okay? Time is up, so we will come back next week and we will take up from verse number 68. And with the prayer.
Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kansa Chanura Mardayam Devati Paramanandam Krishna Vande Jagat Guru.
Thank you. Hare Krishna. And those who can make it for Sister Tila's prayers, please let us know in advance. It's next Sunday. 7:30 to 8:30 p.m.